Okay, so the Shambhala prophecy has been, and what it says about the not knowing, the compassion, particularly the compassion that it's not what that is. We often say, oh, it's nice, very compassionate person. But it's not being afraid of the suffering. That's what it boils down to. So there are lessons that I also derive from Rilke's poetry. You know that Rilke has been very important to me because of the great boon that's come into my life of translating it with a sister being, Anita Barrows, and doing that together has been one of the great joys in my life. And so I'm going to give you three of the poems of Rilke, with showing each one with a particular lesson. So from the Sonnets to Orpheus, there is this sonnet and with the first lesson for us, which was there in the to not be afraid of the suffering. Here it goes. You who let yourselves feel, enter the breathing that is more than your own. So by turning to paying attention, choosing to actually honor your feelings, what a concept. You who let yourselves feel, enter the breathing that is more than your own. Let it brush your cheeks as it divides and rejoins behind you. Sort of as if you're living, you're awake, and you're alive in a living world. Blessed ones, whole ones, you where the heart begins. You are the bow that shoots the arrow, and you are the target. You're separated from nothing, in other words. And then he says, fear not the pain. Let its weight fall back into the earth. For heavy are the mountains, and heavy are the seas. Fear not the pain, because it's bigger than you. It's not just your individual pain. You are opening to something vaster. So don't think it's just yours or struggling under so great a burden. It's too much for you. So as he said, let its weight fall into the earth, for heavy are the mountains, heavy the seas. Give yourselves to the air, to what you cannot hold. So that's lesson number one, not to be afraid of the pain. Then the second lesson comes from the Book of Hours, which was written over 100 years ago at the beginning of the last century. And he's in his, like, he's 23 or 24 when he writes this, but he senses what is coming in the 20th century. The world wars, the death camps, the wasted cities, et cetera, et cetera. Along with all that. But he, so he, these prayers, for the first time, he turns from talking to God to talking to, in the same tone, talking to earth. And I'll just read the first line in German because it gives you this, it sounds like a little funeral beat. Du dunkelnder Grund, geduldig erträgst du die Mauern. Dear darkening ground, you've endured so patiently the walls we've built. Perhaps you'll give the cities one more hour and grant the churches and cloisters too. And those that labor, can you let their work still grip them another 5 hours or seven before you become forest again and water and widening wilderness in that hour of inconceivable terror when you take back your name from all things? So he facing it. But how is he facing it? Ah, what a lesson for us. Because surely that sense of doom is something we're not entirely immune to. So how do you face it? And he says, just give me a little more time. I just need a little more time because I want to love the things as no one has thought to love them until they're worthy of you and real. What an idea. He just said, I just need a little more time because I've got this strategic plan and I have an appointment with the Secretary of Defense, and or I've just got a grant from the Ford Foundation, and I have, or I'm just about to graduate with my. And he wants a little more time because I'm going to love the things as no one has thought to love them. And I know, and you know, that you, each of you, is gifted with a love for some things that is so yours. So you love things in a way that hasn't certain things you've seen with your eyes, felt with your heart, that you have this capacity to love parts of life. Well, if you're ever going to exercise that, now is the time. And you don't know any, you don't need anyone else's permission. You don't need any visas. You don't need any foundation grants. You don't need any of that. We don't need that. So that's lesson number two from Rilke. So first, what? Know your lesson. Fear not. Don't be afraid. Second, dare to love the things that you know already how to do. Just look at that. Just to recognize that. Now the last one. This is also from the sonnets. Wait, that's not this book. That's this book. This was a sonnet that Anita and I were translating in March of 2003. And as you'll remember, that was the time that we were, as our country was invading Iraq. Shock and awe. And it was, despite the unparalleled demonstrations the world over. And this was so hard to bear, the suffering, though we didn't know how bad it would actually be. We get a better idea now of what that fateful, deceptive choice was. But it was hard. And this sonnet helped so much. It goes like this. Quiet friend who've come so far. Wait a minute, let me just it here so that I. Quiet friend who has come so far, feel how your breathing makes more space around you. Let this darkness be a bell tower, and you the bell. And as you ring, what batters you becomes your strength. I'm going to repeat that. Let this darkness be a bell tower and you the bell. As you ring, what batters you becomes your strength. Move back and forth into the changes? What's it like, this intensity of pain? Love that line. Use your curiosity. Those of you in Vipassana mindfulness practice probably know the great benefits of curiosity instead of closing off something because it's just uncomfortable. Getting, oh, what's that like? Does it, I'm just moved up my shoulder. It's just, use that. What's it like, this intensity of pain? If the drink is bitter, turn yourself to wine. In this uncontainable night, be the mystery at the crossroads of your senses, the meaning discovered there. And if the world has ceased to hear you, say to the silent earth, I flow, and to the rushing water speak, I am. So the third lesson from Rilke, in addition to not being afraid of the suffering and of using your capacity and skill at loving, is to realize that this openness to what is befalling our planet expands your identity. There is a shift in your experience of life as you begin to experience that you are the earth. This piece of earth, unlike any other piece of earth, but coming out of earth, every part of you, gifted into this time. Thanks to all the conditions of the last centuries and millennia being prepared for this time. So much more than what your name and social security number can represent. The journey that you've taken to be here, take part of that and say to the rushing water, I am, to the silent earth, I flow. And realizing that earth, the intelligence of earth, the magic of earth, the great story of earth, the great mothering, fruitful capacity of earth, can work through you, through your hands, through your words, through your life. And that it's unstoppable, it will always be there. I'm gonna give you a little practice that comes from the is a training for the Bodhisattva, that you use your breath so that when something comes at you, a piece of bad news or grief, something to arouse particularly your fear or terror, that you can avoid sealing yourself off and throwing up your defenses. So it's using, you wanna try it? Yeah. Okay, so just empty your hands, or just put your pencil down for a moment. And we call this breathing through. Because there are many traditions that use the breath as a, for, as a spiritual practice. And like in the Hindu, you can breathe out the garbage, you know, breathe in the beauty and breathe out the negative. Or in Tonglen and Buddhism, you can breathe in the pain and breathe out the healing. But this is different. This is just letting the breath flow through you and take in what the world presents to you, without shrinking away or throwing up a shield. So see if you can picture, first of all, center on your breathing. Relax into your breathing. How wonderful that we can choose where we put our mind. And we can feel all the different sensations that accompany the breath. And we realize that as we, the breathing in and the breathing out, it could be, isn't it like being breathed as well? You're being breathed by life. And now you can picture that breath like a ribbon of air. And you picture it coming up through the nasal passages, down through the windpipe, into the lungs. And now by an effort of the imagination, picture it going through the heart and back out again into the web of life. So this is like a loop running through you, connecting you to the vaster web of life. And now imagine that the news of the suffering of our world is like granules on that ribbon of air. And you can take it in. They could be just snatches of an image, hands on bars of a window, feet running through rubble in a bombed city, lines of people waiting for food, drones piloted without from a distance out over refugee camps. Whatever it is, you can let those, take those granules and on that ribbon of air and breathe it through down into your body and take it through your heart. Now don't hang on to it. Just let it flow through your heart and out into the resources of the web of life. All you're asked to do is let take it through your heart. That's all you're asked to do now. Later you will act on it. But instead of sealing yourself off because it's troubling and depressing, just take it through. Now, perhaps no images come to you at all. Perhaps it's just a blank numbness. Well, breathe that through your heart as well, because that's a very real part of our world today. Or perhaps what comes up for you is not suffering of your world, but in your own life. From your own relationships or your work or your family. And take that through your heart. And if you might feel for a moment that your heart might break, know that your heart is not an object that can break. But if it were, they say that the heart that breaks open can hold the whole universe. It is that big.